Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child opened in London in 2016 and on Broadway this past summer. The story begins 19 years after the events of J.K. Rowling's final Harry Potter book, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and follows the boy wizard, now a family man wizard, Harry Potter, and his son, Albus Severus Potter, as the latter begins his education at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Albus is a bit stooped from living in the shadow of his famous father. There's magic to do in the acclaimed and oft-awarded two-part theatrical experience, and the production asks audience members not to give anything away. The script is available, so one could know the plot before attending. I did. But there are effects, tricks, and swirls of secrets we are implored to keep. It was with this fear of revealing too much that I sat down with Sam Clement, who plays Albus, to talk about the show. We found plenty to talk about without giving anything away. He originated the role in London and now plays it on Broadway. Sam, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Give us a very quick biography that brings you to here. Tell us about your life up to getting cast in this.
Okay, cool. So I first started acting when I was around about 11, I think, and it was mainly for like a hobby. I didn't fit in with all the sporty kids at school and wanted to find something I was good at, something to put my energy into. And my mum was like, well, try joining this theatre arts course group. I did that, and I was there for about 7-8 years in total up to when I left. And 4 or 5 years into it, my tutor said, you're great at this and you seem to have a lot of energy for creativity. You should think about doing more outside of this. So I did more at school. And then someone said to me, maybe consider joining the National Youth Theatre, which is an organisation in the UK which take on about 500 kids from around the United Kingdom every single year. You do a 2-week course with professional practitioners in London, doing professional work, and then you're part of their books. I got a place on that, and an audition came up on their members area for a show at Regent's Park Open Air Theatre called Lord of the Flies. Went along, did an audition, didn't think anything would come of it, and then 4 auditions later got cast in that, which led me to finding my agent. And then must have been 4 or 5 years later, because that was 2011, so come 2015 I got my first audition for Harry Potter after doing a plethora of work in between, a bit of TV stuff and a load of plays, and then went up for the play, read with the casting director in London, had 3 or 4 auditions with John and Stephen, the director and movement director, then got cast in the final workshop of the play, did the workshop, and then they offered me the part of Albus, and now I'm here on Broadway. So that's it in a nutshell.
Very well done. Not everybody can do that. You're very good. Where do you come in on Harry Potter prior to this play existing? Did you read the books? Have you seen the movies? Do you care? Do you like it? When were you first sorted on Pottermore, etc.?
Okay, so I'm not a huge nerd, as it were, but I'm a big fan of the books and her stories. I read the books as I was growing up, as in when they came out, watched the films, had a big group of friends at school that loved them, and we had a little community, as it were. But I was never one to go back and reread them. But then when the job came up and I got the part, that was a chance for me to go back and reread a lot of the novels. And I have to say, looking at them again and going through them with adult eyes, they had a seriously profound effect on me. A lot more than they did when I was younger. You know, I've lived 24 years of a life, as it were. And I'm a huge fan of what she's done and her work. I think the universe is extraordinary. And like this play, whether you're a Harry Potter fan or not, it's a story. All of the stories are about family and love and grief and isolation. And this play, Fathers and Sons, and it just tackles a whole range of universal truths that we all have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And she has such humanity within these stories and such rich characters, which is the most beautiful thing about the world she's created.
Yes, the stories are so specific and universal at the same time. And because while they're also about family, they're about society and societal pressures and terrible leaders and fighting them.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I say to people, whether you're a Harry Potter fan or not, or a theatre fan or not, you're going to have a lovely time seeing this play. I don't know how you can walk into this theatre and not empathise with at least one person on that stage.
Do you have a favourite character from the novels?
My favourite character? I mean, when I first read them and saw the films, I think Ron. I mean, it was, you know, we're all drawn to humour, as it were, and the one that always ends up on his bum, you know, that's him. He's the buffoon. So I think probably Ron, still to this day. And Paul does a wonderful job of it in the show.
He does. He's so funny.
Oh, he is Ron. He is literally Ron Weasley.
So your character, Albus Severus
Potter has a lot of, he's dealing with so much. He has a lot of angst and yes. is to figure out so much having such a famous father. How do you prepare for that? And does it come with you on stage and leave you at the end of the show? Or do you have to sort of like, I don't know, like shake it off when the play is over?
It's an interesting one. In terms of, well, I remember when I first read it, which was in 2015, and I was reading, I was flicking through the pages, thinking this guy is kind of very unlikable. I took a real dislike to him, which I think a lot of people do if you read the play script. And I said to myself from the beginning, because we're seeing this story through his eyes, he has to be likable. There has to, you know, the audience have to be on side with him. They have to be rooting for him, because if they're not, the story's kind of screwed, as it were. So that was where I started. But in terms of where we're very similar, I suffered a bit of bullying at school, which he does as well, and that was a way in for me to start to find that angst and how that manifests itself within him and how that would manifest itself within me. And from there, I started layering it with all the isolation stuff that he'd go through, and then his building his friendship with Scorpius and the angsty, fueled relationship he has with his father. And I just sort of layered it from there. In terms of it leaving me or being with me during the show and coming with me after the show, I've got to a place now where I come off stage and I'm able to just put a wall between me and Albus, as it were, and move away. We've done a lot of shows now. I'm not sure how many, including the ones in London. It's a lot. So there's, you know, you kind of build up a routine of this is my part of this day, and then this is Albus's part of the day, as it were. So that's how I deal with that.
The onstage friendship with Scorpius is phenomenally close. It's so good. Yeah. How do you build that with your fellow actor?
Yeah, me and Anto, I mean, I didn't know Anto at all. I was told that we were going to do some chemistry reads in London, but they'd found this guy and that's what they wanted, and that was that. So we met on the first day of rehearsals. And, you know,
you're like, hi, we're best friends.
We're best friends now, and we need to build a relationship. So, and you never know whether you're going to get on with someone. You know, we're very, very different people, me and Anto. But I think a lot of what happened in terms of building this friendship of these two young lads was a lot of how we built our friendship, and the fun that we have off stage, we are able to throw onto the stage, as it were. And I think that's the best way to build up a chemistry between two actors and allow that to fuel what happens on stage. And then all of the other stuff sort of comes into place, and you talk a lot about the friendship and the backstory and filling in the gaps between the scenes of which we don't see. All that happens, but I think in terms of the truth of it and the reality of it, it comes from a lot of how me and him are off stage. Does that make sense?
It does. And it also just occurred to me that you have been kind of on an adventure in real life together, doing this enormous, successful, beautiful, extremely fun show, and then doing it in London and winning awards and coming here and winning awards. It's like a real life adventure.
Completely. I mean, I never thought I'd be a part of something this big and this wild, and to, you know, we've been practically living with each other for the last 3 years. I mean, we're not, but we spend so much time at the theatre together. That's kind of what it feels like. And, you know, we know every single thing about each other. And it's been an amazing thing to share with him, you know. And we will forever, you know, be friends for life.
You also have Albus has a fraught relationship with Harry Potter, with his father. How do you and Jamie Parker work on that? Or how did you? Now you've got it, but how did you work on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's again, an interesting one. I personally have an amazing relationship with my dad, so it was a tricky thing for me to begin to break down. I mean, that we had endless conversations of you know, what growing up was for me and what growing was up for Jamie, and hearing his side of the parenthood. You know, he himself is a dad. He's got a young lad called Will, and it's sharing a lot of stories from our own personal lives growing up, and him with his kids, and allowing that to start to fill in what happens with these two and what we can use to start to fuel this relationship, and then and build it from there, and allow the text to also do a lot of that work. I always remember asking my dad as well, when he saw the play for the first time, going, how did you respond to the relationship, given that we have a very close relationship? And he just didn't say much about it at all. He sort of just buried it under the carpet and didn't want to think about it, which I thought was a really interesting reaction. But I know it really pangs on a lot of fathers' heartstrings, as it were, this relationship. People find it very, very difficult.
Well, he didn't talk about it. He's a dad and British, so.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's just a bit too close to home. I don't know. Yeah, just didn't want to open up them doors, as it were, which I thought was very, very interesting.
The show is two parts that on Wednesdays and Saturdays, you have to do both.
And Sundays.
You do both parts. Yeah. How do you do that?
People always say, are Thursdays and Friday evenings easier? They're actually not. I think it's easier doing it all in one day. Okay. I mean, physically, it's exhausting. I mean, it demands a lot of us as actors, the ensemble of 40 people. We are the cogs of this show. There's no big design to make the show work. We are the mechanics of it. So it's physically very demanding. But you establish a relationship and a rapport with the audience over part one, that it kind of gives you a running jump at part two. And when you have a little break in between, you have a sleep and you come back to it, your head is still very much in the play. And on a Thursday evening, you do part one, it's great. And then you have 24 hours away from the play. The audience has 24 hours away from the play. We've filled our minds with a lot of other stuff and we come back to it. And we need to try and pick up the story again and find that energy where we left off with them, because it's live theatre. Every single day is very, very different. The audience have a very different response to every day. So we start with a warm-up at 12:30 every day, physical warm-up, which consists of yoga, circuit training, a lot of stretching. I mean, a plethora of activities that Stephen Hoggart has put together for us to keep us in the right shape to do this show. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have an hour to get ready, which will get us into wigs and costume and vocal warm-ups, whoever does them. And then we get on and we hit the ground running with the show, and you just ride that wave for 5.5 hours. And again, muscle memory is an extraordinary thing. Your body knows when it needs to turn on and start to do this work again. It's really hard if you ever take time off from the show to come back on a Wednesday two-show day and do it. It's really hard. But again, the muscle memory sort of hold out, and then you're beyond exhausted at the end of the day. So yes, it's tiring, but I think two-show days are somewhat easier.
I feel if I don't do my radio show for a week, which is not the same demands by any stretch, I'd sit down on a Monday and I'm like, how do you do the radio? Yeah. I can't imagine doing what you do.
Completely. I remember doing it in London, and I also did it here as well. The first week I had off, I came back and I thought, I'm just going to sit in my front room and just run through the script. I know it, but part of me is going, well, what if? What if you get on stage tomorrow and nothing happens? So, yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird one.
You have a director and a movement director. Yes. How do they work together? How do they each work with you?
John and Stephen are just... I can't sing enough praises about both of them as human beings and creators of theatre. You know, they are two creators absolutely at the top of their game. They're childhood friends. They've grown up together. Again, they know everything about each other. And in a room, it's, I think, the most collaborative experience I've ever had. We had 10-week rehearsal period in London. This was when we didn't know what we did know. They had an idea of what the language of the show was, but again, none of it had been created, as it were. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of every day, Stephen would set us a series of tasks to begin creating this magical world, which was either putting on a cloak and he'll give you 2 or 3 bars of 8 to a piece of music. We will create a sequence of moves to go with that and how we'd potentially move a cloak. And that's how we began creating the show and the physicality of the show. And it was all very, very organic. They wanted a lot of it to come from us. You know, it was never a case of them going, well, that's what this is, and this is where we need you to stand. This is how we want this to be done. It all had to feel very organic to us. And, you know, they're incredibly respectful to us as actors and, us back to them as well. And John around the table with Jack as well, the writer, Jack Thorne, who's equally as wonderful. We sit and read a scene and chat through a scene and, the logistics of the scene and the dynamics of the scene and start building the relationships. And again, and asking endless questions and wanting a lot of stuff to come from us. We were able to not write a lot of the text, but we gave a lot of ideas to Jack, because he wanted to write this specifically to our voices as much as possible. So I think out of any play or any job I've ever done, it's without a doubt the most collaborative experience. And they make it a very, very free space to fail in their rehearsal room, even though time is very short, despite it being 10 weeks rehearsals. It's a very big show. Mm-hmm. You know, you run out of time. There's not all the time in the world. We have to create this monstrous show. But they allowed us a very safe space to fail. And you don't find that very often. You know, I can't sing enough of the praises. They're amazing.
You are making this Harry Potter super fan very happy. Very happy. This is incredible. It's so great to hear that something you love, everybody's like hearts aren't, everybody's cool, absolutely, everybody's working on it.
I was just saying that as well on the creative team. Obviously, J.K. Rowling herself is on the team, and she was incredibly respectful of John and Stephen and Jack and us as a company of actors and our process, and just let us do our thing in creating this play. You know, it's her story, and she's got so much ownership over these characters, rightly so. She knows the ins and outs of all of them, and just sort of went, there you go. Even though it's her story as well, you know, she just allowed us the 10 weeks in London to create this beast. And I'm sure that's a very, very nerve-wracking thing for anyone to do. You know, these characters are so close to her personally. So she, again, herself was an amazing collaborator and very open to allowing us to do whatever we needed to do to find this story and these people.
A couple of moments ago, you mentioned the music and mm-hmm. the music of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child by Imogen Heap is going to come out on CD.
Yes.
What does the music mean to you in the play? What does it give you?
Music, I think, helps anyone connect emotionally to anything. That's at the heart of any emotional drama. But for this play, it's unlike any other play. There's something very episodic about it. It's very quick. It's got a real pace to it. There's a real musicality to it, as it were, within the writing and the rhythm of the play. So it kind of felt like, to the team, a very natural thing to score a lot of it, to allow that to add weight and depth emotionally to the play. And there's pangs of music that introduce characters and set a tone for that character, which you either pick up as an audience member or it just happens subconsciously. And it layers the emotional core of the play beautifully, I think. And, you know, it's, like I say, it's not a musical, but the musicality within it is so prevalent.
Sam, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Sam Clement plays Albus Severus Potter in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child at the Lyric Theatre on Broadway. The show is also up in London, with productions in San Francisco, Melbourne, and Hamburg on the horizon in the coming months and years. The production features an original score by Imogen Heap, which is available from Sony Masterworks Broadway today. Links to more information are posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.